It's Monday, September 12th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central Podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Everyone, Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Geek News Central is also sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. Now with HD Faces, the world's best web conferencing solution, get your free trial at GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and use the promo code PODCAST. Well, we're going to get started here, and if I can talk correctly, everyone, welcome to the show. I got a great one. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There is no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Honolulu. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Of course, my name is Todd Cochran, and you can find me at geeknewscentral.com. Of course, you can check out all the content over there, Geek News Central, all of our great bloggers, and of course, all of our additional shows that we have on there, like Robot Underpants, The Gadget Professor, and of course, our Saturday morning tech show. So thanks for everyone for joining us this evening or joining us whenever you're listening to the show. It's late here in Honolulu. Well, actually early evening, about 8 p.m. And I want to give a warm welcome to all of the Hana, all of you that are longtime listeners of the show and any of you that may be new. Boy, I just it seems like starting the show tonight off, I like tripping all over myself. So we'll see if it's going to be one of those evenings. But for all of you that are longtime subscribers of the show, thanks for being here and thanks for being part of the family. And of course, we want to welcome listeners from around the world that tune into the show. If you're new to the show, you'll want to get signed up for our newsletter. The newsletter really covers everything that that I cover during the show. You'll be sent that in your email inbox immediately following the show. It'll contain all the show notes and really all the links to everything that I have talked about. You'll find the link to the newsletter up on the top hand banner of the webpage. Basically says newsletter. You go in there and get subscribed. You can subscribe to the Gadget Professor's newsletter as well while you're in there. Of course, we want you to get subscribed to the show. You'll find a subscribe box basically in the second column of the website, where you can sign up to the audio or video portion of this podcast. You also can get access to our special media events feed, Morning Tech Show, Gadget Professor, Robot Underpants, and the Chrome Show. Of course, we've got a lot of daily content on the website for all our content creators. And so make sure you visit the site on a daily basis and check out everything over there. Of course, if you want to reach out to me, you can do so via Twitter at Geek News. Or you can, of course, follow me there as well for updates and for information that's been going on at the blog. And as well, you can email me here at the show at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. And that basically just send in your comments about today's show. And if you have where you really want to get something off your chest, you can call our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. And that's where you can call in and give a rant or a compliment or a criticism, whatever it may be. And, of course, we encourage you to do that as well. You can watch us on the Tech Podcast channel on the Roku and Boxy and Samsung Smart TV. Of course, we're streaming live tonight at live.geekandcentral.com and then simulcast later at techpodcast.com/live, where my fellow TPN members over there are also streaming a variety of different shows throughout the week. So definitely check that schedule out at techpodcast.com/live. Well, we got a lot going on, and it was actually a pretty mellow weekend, but it was a typical Monday with emails firing off left and right, phone conversations, you name it, and it's shaping up to be a busy week. We're really full throttle ahead and getting ready for a number of events, Blog World being one of them, where we're going to be exhibiting here in the basically first week of November, and then we go right into the podcast awards ceremony that week as well. The following week, I'm going to be out in Washington, D.C., and then shortly after I get back, we'll be doing the 24-hour podcast. We're going to get a date for that. But lots going on here, and of course, all of this brought to you by our sponsors here at Geek News Central. GoDaddy.com is a longtime sponsor, and we encourage you to check out all the great products and services GoDaddy has to offer. And I tell you, we're going to save you a lot of money because I have probably the most extensive list of promo codes in the space. And these don't expire, so you can come back and use these year after year. Geek5 will save you 15% on any order, $20 or more. Todd20 will save you 20% on a one-year shared hosting account. That's a great promo code to use, and that really helps the show out as well. Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders at GoDaddy.com. ComSale will get you .coms at $7.99. ComSale 2 will get you renewals at $7.49. Geek will get you $5 off any order, $30 or more. The one that seems to be real popular right now is the Aloha code, where you get $20 off any order, $75 or more. And of course, GoDaddy has lots of great products and services, and we want to thank GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here at GNC. Without them, the lights would go off, and we would not be able to do what we do, and your support of them is greatly appreciated. I've been listening to a number of podcasts, and one that I've been listening to over the past 2 or 3 months, and it's been an interesting show to listen to, is Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak's No Agenda show. And Adam's show is 100% user-supported. They basically request donations from their listeners, and they do pretty well week to week, as near as I can figure. And I decided, having been a listener for a while, I needed to drink my own medicine, and stepped up to the bar and basically donated to his last show and sent him and John a note. And I think it's important that there's a variety of different models of new media, and all of them can really kind of coincide and work together. You know, these guys do like this 2.5 or 2 hour and 45 minute show twice a week, huge amount of prep work. And really, it's according to Adam, it's his probably his biggest source, or one of his biggest sources of income. And, you know, they rely on the listeners to support the show. And I think it's a great alternative to having an advertiser for the podcast. And they have a unique show, though, and they have a unique following as well. I think it'd be very hard for a lot of other shows to duplicate what they have done and be able to raise the amount of money. I think on the last show, I heard that they we're close to nearly $4,000 in user donations, which is huge. Maybe it was $3,500, something like that. I was just doing some quick math in my head. But and it isn't always that way. Sometimes they have a couple hundred bucks, and it could go the other extreme. So it goes with the tide and flow of the show. But it's cool to see that they're able to have success with that and not have to be really, I guess for a better word, endeared to their sponsors. Now, the sponsor of this show, I have no issues with the sponsors of this show. I love their products. I love their services. They do well on their sponsorships with us, and really, quite truly, keep food on my family's table. So I'm happy to have them as sponsors and use their products. So, you know, I think it's important that as the models are different from show to show, whatever you're listening to out there, you know, throw the if the producer has a, or if the show has a user supported model and they're just looking for a few donations here and there, you know, throw them $10 or $20 a month or whatever you feel that is worthy of the time that you listen to those shows. Or, you know, maybe not even that much, $5 a month. But I think it goes a long way in helping those folks do their trade. And here we've got some user support as well. And as I was telling Adam and John, about 90% of the show's revenue and what I live off of comes from the sponsors. About another, we're close to 10% at this time, comes from listeners and viewers of the show. And it's, you know, originally we had planned on ramping that up so that we could hire another person to help out with the show and the production and so forth. But it never really developed into that. So that's why sometimes we have as many as 3 ads on the show, to try to kind of stay ahead of the 8 ball when it comes to earnings for the show. So, you know, I don't know why I got into this rant about talking about this, but I just wanted to basically say that, you know, as I listen to shows, I'm kind of taking some of my own advice here and going out and supporting those shows. And I hope you guys do the same on the shows that you may listen to and get enjoyment and value from week after week after week. Well, this past Friday, took my son and daughter to their homecoming event. And I have no idea why, but my son sat beside me and my wife and I, and he had his robotics team with him. And of course, you know, football games when I was growing up was where you kind of went to scope out girls from your high school and maybe the other high school. And, you know, it was that type of a thing. But these guys didn't move, but they all had their cell phones out and they were all texting. And I talked about it during the Saturday morning tech show. I was asking my son, who are you texting? Are you texting somebody that's not at the game and you're giving them updates? He goes, oh, no. I'm texting some girl that's like over in the next bleachers over. And I'm like, why don't you get up and go over and say hello? No way could I get him to get up and go over and say hello in person. It's a totally different world, folks. And I'm just, you know, I'm kind of like, we're going to have a talk. He's still a little young, so he's a little shy yet. But boy, oh boy, half the time texting and sometimes watching a football game. And I'm like, I think I'm getting more out of the football game than he was. But his school just absolutely stomped the visiting school. So they had a very successful homecoming game. And I can see that presence is alive and well in America, which is good. Overall, then, pretty easy weekend here. Really, we didn't do a lot. And I did some honey-do list stuff, but other than that, it was a nice weekend to just kick back. Getting ready, of course, for the Podcast Awards, which is going to kick off on the 15th. And Tim, our admin from One Technology, says we're ready to rock and roll. I have to do a few editing on a few config files, but those will probably take about 15 minutes. But we're ready to launch the 7th Annual Podcast Awards. Nominations will open for 2 weeks. Starting on the 15th, and we'll essentially finish up a few days before Blog World, a new media expo in Los Angeles, which will have the awards ceremony at the show. And it's going to be kind of interesting because we'll see how many people are actually going to be able to attend. But that was it, essentially what's going on here. And didn't want to spend too much time tonight talking about stuff, but I do want to remind you of the Ohana store over at cafepress.com/Ohana store. All right, let me go ahead and take care of our last little bit of business here before we get into the all the tech content. And I got a lot of stuff to go over with you, and there's a bunch of stuff that is that's popped here in the past day or two that I want to go over. But you guys know that GoToMeeting has announced the HD Faces upgrade to their GoToMeeting suite. And I've been excited about this, and it's totally jazzed me what this application is. It's basically breathed completely new life into GoToMeeting by Citrix. And you know, GoToMeeting is the way I meet with colleagues, and with this new HD Faces with HD with high definition group video conferencing, and now just with my webcam as it sits right here on my computer screen, I can launch the GoToMeeting session, and I can see the person I'm meeting with, and we can do proposals and work through stuff on the online. As a matter of fact, I was doing something with an actual web developer today. We're talking about some changes potentially coming to Geek News Central. We were walking through and doing some markups, and you can collaborate with anyone around the world face to face, and you can see their facial expressions, and you know that really expresses so much more than just hearing someone. It really does. And the video quality is clear, natural, and it is obviously has the highest resolution in the industry. Nothing really compares. GoToMeeting with HD Faces will make your online meetings even more personal, engaging, effective. Plus, it's very easy to use. I've said for a long time that really a kindergartner could almost run this software. It's that easy. And I want you to try GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It will change the way you work. As a listener of this show, you can get it for free, and you can try it for free, again, for 30 days. And all you really got to do is, let me show you the webpage. You go over to GoToMeeting.com. Again, you go over to the GoToMeeting.com. You click the Try It Free button. It's right here, this orange button on the website says Try It Free. enter your info in there, and you're going to use the promo code podcast in the bottom of the page link, and that's going to get you that free 30-day trial, and it'll get us credit for your trial. And we want you to definitely try GoToMeeting for 30 days on us. And again, be sure to use the promo code podcast. And thanks for GoToMeeting for being a sponsor here at Geek News Central. All right, let me go ahead and get into the full stack of stuff I've got for you tonight. And got a few suggestions via Google Plus. If you're not following me on Google Plus, just search for me, Todd Cochran. You'll find me and add me on Google Plus, and you can help contribute to the show on show days if you want. All right, first thing I've got up here is an article over on pehub.com. And specifically, this is talking about the TechCrunch Disrupt, or whatever they call that, the TechCrunch Disrupt conference going on in San Francisco. Of course, the news came out early Monday, AOL making the announcement that Mike Arrington was officially out of the company. And but he was at the TechCrunch event, and his Crunch Fund, which is partially funded by the company that just fired him, which is the weirdest thing in the world, is still intact. So he'll Mike Arrington is now officially a guest, a venture capitalist. And he did an interview at TechCrunch Disrupt with a longtime venture capitalist, Doug Leone of Sequoia Capital. And of course, Sequoia Capital is one of the big dogs in Silicon Valley. And there were some very interesting things that were said in this conversation beyond him asking Mike why he ever would want to be a VC. But here is an interesting topic, and I've talked about this on this show before. It talks about age and venture capital. And this pisses me off, to be honest with you. And it's part of the reason that I think that, well, when we started Raw Voice, we had kind of looked around a little bit, and everyone told us that we were too old. And specifically, I was too old to start a company. And here's what they say on age. And this is almost, in my opinion, almost discriminatory, but they say the firm also seems to prefer investing in a very young entrepreneurs. Leon said it typically invests in people who are 25 or younger these days. He assigned the shift to the fact that the technology infrastructure in which the company historically invested is now fairly mature, which in turn has Sequoia focused primarily on the application layer. Put another way, founders needn't know as much deep technology, including about chips, as they once did. It is also possible for someone younger to get the company going, given that the related costs have fallen precipitously over the years. Leon called the shift a thankful one, explaining that if you want a founder to serve as the VP of product or in a very important technical role, or as the CEO, it is possible to have such conversations with a younger person, where it's different conversation with a 45-year-old founder who's bent on being CEO. Now, I was never really bent on being CEO of Raw Voice, you know, and oftentimes venture capitalists will want to bring in their own CEO or suggest a CEO to run the companies. And it's kind of interesting here. Aaron can ask, as I would have, if there wasn't age discrimination in the industry. Leon was quick to say no, but in some parentheses, not entirely convincingly, pointing out that Sequoia has many founders, okay, who are more advanced in age, including at ServiceNow, an on-demand enterprise IT company, whose founder, Fred Luddy, launched the company at age 45. But I think what you'll find is like a 95-5. I think 95% of these investments go to companies that have 25 or younger startup. I mean, what it is at 25, people are willing to work for almost nothing. They have largely no families. They have they're willing to live like they had lived in a college dorm with four or five people, maybe 10 people in a house, and they're willing to work 20 hours a day. Whereas a 45-year-old person, or in my case, when we started Raw Voice, 42, Actually, 41. Was I 40? Yeah, 41. I have a family already, and I had to have a certain amount of income in order to survive. And, but that's one of the reasons why I think the venture capitalists only like to work with 25 or younger these days. And, here's something that's even more amazing in this write-up. And it's not necessarily the age thing, but you look at how these venture capitalists invest in so many different companies and they look for a single or two or three home runs in the life of a fund. And Arrington asked Leon if Sequoia had ever lost investor money. Leon said that they have lots of revelations for the crowd. He said that Sequoia's worst fund has returned capital and then some. He also said that when in 2002, it looked like one of the funds wasn't going to do well, the Sequoia partners wrote personal checks to individual investors, the Silicon Valley crowd that invests side by side with us, to ensure that no one could say we lost money investing in Sequoia Capital. So they've had between $5 and $7 billion brought in venture money, or actually that's how much has been put in these funds. And he feels that they have been able to return between $15 and $20 billion to the investors. That's a pretty doggone good return on your investment. If you think that if they had $5 billion invested and raised as much as $20 billion and you had your money four times over, a pretty doggone good business. Even though they have all these funds that all these companies that lose money and go out of business. But this is a fascinating write-up. And once again, it's proven true, things I've known for years, that I really feel there is discrimination on companies that have older founders. And really that money's not available to those types of companies unless you have some really super explosive idea. You look at the crap that these venture capitalists investing in today. I was having a discussion with two of very close friends, one that's in Europe, one that is living in Seattle, actually just not Seattle, but he's just north of the Oregon border in Washington State. And we were laughing about all this crap that venture capitalists are dumping, million, 2 million here, 3 million there, 4 million there. We know these companies are not going anywhere, but the two individuals that I were talking to, we're on this older stage. We're in the, you know, basically I think the youngest guy was 35 and I think I was the oldest. So there was a 10-year range there. And we were laughing that if we went to Silicon Valley with a new idea and was shopping for money, we would basically be told to pack sand because of our age. And we all laugh, you know, because the other one guy is a serial entrepreneur, has flipped a couple of companies. The other guy that I was talking to, he's flipped two. So, you know, and here I am, I haven't flipped a company yet, but I built a company up without venture. And, you know, we were all just chuckling about it. And, but this is a great, insightful article over at pehub.com. I have the link up in the show notes for you guys to check out. I spent a long time on this, but I just wanted to point it out. And if you're a young person, if you're 25 and younger and you're just getting out of a school and you're a programmer and you have no family and no life and want to do a business, go to Silicon Valley. They will give you millions of dollars and you'll be able to blow it whichever way you want and build a company and potentially build it and fail. And they won't care. They won't hold it against you. You can probably do it a couple of more times before you get out of the age group in which there is, before they discriminate against you and said, you can't have no money. You're too old. Oh, man. It is very funny. It really is. And it just makes you go, All right. A good article over on BBC. Talking about bad spelling, and boy, I guess I'm going to have to watch out. Bad spelling opens up security loopholes. And it says a missing dot in an email address might mean messages ending up in the hands of cyber thieves, researchers have found. cyber thieves are creating web domains or buying domain names that are very close to, okay, for example, if you have the have a business unit that is bank.com, and then you want to have multiple domains for your different branches, let's say us.bank.com or hawaii.bank.com. So all the email addresses at that bank are user at, and if they're going to send a message to the Hawaii Bank, it would be hawaii.bank.com. So what cyber thieves are doing is they're entering, just buying domain, hawaiibank.com. And what they're finding is about 30% of the top 500 companies in the United States were vulnerable to this type of a security shortcoming, according to the researchers. And what they did is they set up a couple of drop boxes and received 120,000 wrongly sent messages to a number of basically domains that had email addresses sent up to them that where this mistake was happening by folks forgetting to put the period in the email address. Can you imagine that? Sending an email to your bank and giving them bank information and having sent it to the wrong address. So they said they got all kinds of stuff. They got passwords, details of corporate networks, all kinds of information that should not be in a cybersecurity thief's hand or cyber thief. So this is, they call them doppelganger domains, D-O-P-P-E-L, ganger domains. And they're just, you know, they're really going after a flaw in human nature, not typing correctly. So this is pretty big. So if your company has these domains like this for their email addresses, you may want to see if those subdomains are available. In other words, without the periods, and buy those domains up as people are entering the wrong email address, so you don't end up with your customers' emails going into the abyss. So anyway, good heads up for all of you there. AT&T, boy oh boy, AT&T has admitted that consumers may see some harm if granted GSM monopoly. AT&T basically has responded to the Department of Justice filing. They filed a 27-page response. If you want to read the whole thing, it is available. But in the filing, AT&T's basic tact is to claim that the U.S. Department of Justice has proven that less choice in the market would hurt competition. And some of the things that AT&T writes, it says the complaint largely ignores the significant competition from established providers such as Verizon Wireless and Sprint, and innovative upstart such as Metro PCS, Leap Cricket, and strong regional providers like U.S. Cellular, Cellular South, among others. The department does not and cannot explain how in the face of all these aggressive rivals, the combined AT&T T-Mobile will have the ability or incentive to restrict output, raise prices, or slow innovation, nor can explain how T-Mobile, the only major carrier to have actually lost subscribers in a robust growing market, provides a unique competitive constraint on AT&T. But one of the things that they say in the bottom of this is that this is even more crazy. So it's been reported by AT&T's own analyst that they could upgrade, they could spend $10 billion to upgrade their current network to get to the 96 or 97% market share that they want to get to, instead of spending the $39 billion for T-Mobile. So it doesn't make a lot of good business sense. If you can build it for $10 billion, why buy someone for $39 billion? Now, AT&T lawyers also are ignoring the difference between a national carrier and a local one. Now, I know they've got local carriers here in Hawaii. If you don't ever leave your state or your community, if you never travel, some of these local carriers are pretty good. But here's the thing. They sublease spectrum from usually AT&T or T-Mobile. Now, AT&T is saying that there's at least five carriers in most regions. And And while we all can probably see that in the local communities we live in, it's again, they rely on the infrastructure of the big four or what would become the big three. Lots of things that AT&T denies in their filing. And AT&T appears to use a lot of stuff in their articles that they lifted from Google, and basically making quotes about stuff. So AT&T is trying real hard to spin the story their way. 27-page response to the Department of Justice lawsuit. And we'll see where this goes again. But again, AT&T is poised to gain a monopoly on 3G GSM services in the United States and the top spot in the U.S. market. And let's hope that the U.S. Department of Justice is able to shut this merger down in a big way. What do you guys just think? Do you think that why am I take that ad down? Do you guys think that AT&T should be allowed to acquire T-Mobile? Do you guys think this is good? Do you think this is a good option for all of us? Do you think this is, are you in favor of the merger? If you are, I'd love to hear from you. And if you're an AT&T employee, please tell us in the when you call. We definitely want to know that for sure. But let me know what you think. Geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. Over at launch.is. Pretty good article here. Something pretty cool that's been introduced today in Google Docs. And this is something I'm really excited about. Their Google Docs is launching comment-only sharing options. So in other words, you can create a doc, and then you can allow people to make comments to it instead of editing or just viewing. So I think this is awesome. So you can put something public on the web, make it available so people can get access to it. Then you can add the canned comment. You can require them to sign in or not. And I think this is a great way to, this is going to be some cool things being done with this, I'm sure, in the near future. Now, if they would do the same thing with a spreadsheet, that would be cool too. So, you know, maybe they can. Maybe it is going to work for the spreadsheet portion. But it'd be nice to be able to create survey stuff, all that kind of stuff in Google Docs and not have to pay for any type of survey services. Okay, let's go ahead and move back to main control here. If you're a iOS developer, do you know about TestFlight? I am not aware of this at all, but TestFlight is, if you're a developer, you're going to want to have to check this out immediately. But basically, TestFlight is a over-the-air iOS app distribution service, and it allows people that are building iOS apps to essentially distribute the apps over the air. You don't have to do it via software, and allows people to test your app before you submit it to Google. And this is pretty cool, and we'll see how this works. But they introduced an SDK as well, and just gives people the better ability to test their apps before they send them over to Google. Hey, over on GigaOM, there's a great, and I don't know where they derive this information. Oh, I guess they got it. What's it say here? Nielsen's research. Okay, this came from Nielsen. But let me bring up this article on their page, and you guys can see this graph. The quarter three 2011 report shows that U.S. internet users spent an amazing amount of time on Facebook. And this should probably worry everyone that's out there. But here's an example. Top five U.S. social networks and blogs, total minutes spent on the website, 53,457,258 on Facebook. And then next up was Blogger at 723,000 minutes, Tumblr 623,000, 565,000 for Twitter, 325,000 on LinkedIn. Now, they don't talk about, to me, it sounds like kind of a metric and on minutes, you know, because Are they saying that they're measuring everyone and that's how many minutes they spent on Facebook? I don't fully understand how they come up with this, but basically they said top 10 U.S. web brands by total minutes, in billions. Okay, that's more accurate. Okay, 53,457,200. Okay, so you got to add a bunch of zeros there. Long story short, Facebook 53.5, Yahoo has a 17.2, Google 12.5, AOL Media Network 11.4, MSN Windows Live Bing 9.5, YouTube 9.1, eBay 4.5. EA 4.3, Apple 4.3, Microsoft 3.4. So that makes sense. 53.5 billion minutes was the amount of time spent on Facebook. But if you look at that number, they are definitely getting a huge share of the web traffic. Do you spend that much time on Facebook? I'm spending a heck of a lot of time on Google+. I'm spending very, very little time on Facebook anymore. Amazon's talking about launching an ebook subscription model similar to Netflix. So essentially, you're going to pay a fee, and it's going to give you access to Amazon's library of ebooks. They haven't announced what the price is going to be, but they are exploring it. So the question is, would you sign up for Amazon ebook subscriptions just like you're getting Netflix? Would you pay them $19.95 or $24.95 for unlimited access to books in their library? Now, Kindle books today average about $9.99 per book. And obviously, it's cheaper than buying usually a hardcover or even a softcover, because you buy a hardcover, it's $30, $40. And soft covered, are usually $8, $9, $10. So it's in between. I haven't bought a paper book in a long time. So do you think this is going to go over? And do you think publishers are going to allow them to have a model where they pay them on basically across a spectrum? You know, so many people download it, you make so much money. I don't know. And I'm really interested to see how this is going to work. It's definitely a brand new model for the book industry. Kind of exciting one, actually, too, because oftentimes I will not buy a book by an unknown artist because, I just don't want to spend the money. But if I could get it under a subscription plan where I would just pay a flat rate and get unlimited access to books, I think for the smaller publishers, it would give them the ability to get a lot more exposure and potentially make more money than they would selling on their own. So pretty cool stuff. I'd love to hear you guys' feedback on this. Voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. geeknews@gmail.com. All right, let me go ahead here and bounce into the next topic. We talked a little bit on the last show. And actually, I think I talked about Glenn Beck launching his new TV venture. I think it is the first official show today. Talked about how I was basically going to watch how this mainstream guy, not so mainstream since he got kicked off or quit Fox or however that happened, but Glenn Beck has launched GB, Glenn Beck TV. I don't even know the domain here, but maybe it's gbtv.com is the website. Why didn't just do gb.tv? Probably couldn't afford to buy the domain, but he already had 230,000 subscribers who pay between $5 and $10 a month for access to his GBTV online radio and now video network. And this is according to the Wall Street Journal. And they're saying that he could generate $27 million in subscription revenue within the first year. They think that he's on track to become a $100 million man per year in subscription revenue. And people are pretty, big eyeballs are happening over this. Now, Keith Olbermann basically mused on Twitter that Beck's initial subscriber numbers is actually on the low end. And he feels that he could end up having as much as $1 million per month in just production costs. It would cost him that much to do the hosting, pay his staff and everything else, which sounds about right considering how many people he's probably going to have on the payroll. So, you know, and of course, as the numbers increase due to the cost on the network delivery, that doesn't level out. That just continues to grow. So I'm going to be watching. I'm paid for a couple of months. I'm going to be watching what happens with his network. Just he's got a Glenn Beck behind the scenes. We're just supposed to show you the building of the network, and I'm just going to kind of watch that. But the Wall Street Journal reported today as well that Oprah's new own network only had 156,000 people tuning in on average in June, and she had recently acknowledged that running a cable network is a lot harder than she imagined. So, and this was, and she's on a cable network. So we'll see, you know, Beck, whatever your politics are, and we'll leave that aside. I hope he does great. It's going to make for some very interesting models that could develop. And he may prove that web TV can actually work and be easier. And, you know, we've talked on this show here how, you know, just $2 a month on this show would it'd make, for, if every subscriber did $2, it would make, man, we could do a lot of cool stuff. We really could. We could go to almost an event in the country. I could bring on staff. I mean, it's a pretty amazing what just $2 a listener would do. But at this point, it we'll talk about that another time. So anyway, very cool stuff. So we'll see what happens with his venture. And whatever your politics are, you got to be excited if you like this kind of media, what it means for other people coming online. The in the aftermath of 9/11 and all the disasters that have happened throughout the country and the world, there's a new test now. And research published in the Journal of Breath Research describes experiments using volunteers in a mock-up of a collapsed building. And what they've been able to do is molecules such as acetone and ammonia, which is a natural byproduct of when we exhale, were easily detected through the simulated rubble. These findings are being used to develop an electronic sniffer dog that could search disaster sites for survivors. And apparently a demonstration device has already been produced by one of the collaborators on the research. The intent is to supplement rather than replace the search and rescue dogs currently employed. And they say that dogs are fantastic, but they don't work for very long, and they undergo injury and suffering as a result of their work in a search and rescue environment. They say with these sniffer units, they would be able to continue to work when the dogs took a break. But he says the gases escaping from the box were gathered up, and basically they were actually able to tell that there was someone alive in a mocked-up stack, which is pretty cool. And if you think about it, they're looking specifically for these two elements, acetone and ammonia. Makes a lot of sense. So exciting stuff on potential rescue sniffer devices. You know, now they can stick a wand in your car or just when your window rolls down. If you've been drinking alcohol, it can set the monitor off on a police officer's vest if he's carrying one of these monitors. So why not be able to detect the exhale of someone that's trapped? All right, go ahead, moving into the next topic here. You know, of course, many of you were probably inundated over the weekend on the 9/11 content. And, you know, we really got to, if you think about it, 10 years is a long time in the tech world. And the folks over at technologizer.com wrote about their memories of 9/11 and came up with some other interesting topics. Here's some stuff that did not exist September of 2001. Okay, so here's where we go. 3G wireless, iPod, Windows XP, Xbox, Vizio TV, WordPress, iTunes Music Store, Skype, Facebook, ThinkPads, Firefox, Gmail, TechCrunch, Google Maps, Intel Macs, Twitter, Wii, Intel Core Processors, Hulu, iPhone, Netbooks, Rickrolling, Chrome, iPhone App Store, Groupon, Android, Angry Birds, Foursquare, Bing, iPad, all not available in 2001. Top 10 sites in August 2001 and how things have changed. And top, here's the list 1 through 10 on top 10 sites in August of 2001. MSN, Yahoo, eBay, Neopets, GoTo.com, AOL, Go.com, Passport.com, Excite.com, GeoCities. Oh my God, was number 10. Top 10 sites July 2011. Google, Facebook, Yahoo, YouTube, Bing, Wikipedia, MSN, Amazon, Live.com, and eBay. Browsers. Oh my goodness. Microsoft Internet Explorer had an 89% market share. Netscape had 10.1 in 2001, had 10.47. In August 2011, of course, IE has 51.8, Firefox 21.1, Chrome 14.5. So lots of electronic gadgets as well. So a lot of stuff we had in, didn't have in 2001. If we think about where we're at today, we've come a long way in 10 years. If you look at just the CE portion of the growth, and you think this show didn't start until October of 2004, you know, so there was no such thing as podcast in 2001. Can you imagine if there was? Could you imagine if there was Twitter? Just that alone just makes you go, whoa, what a difference it could have been. All right, moving on here. Remember the Chumby? Well, Chumby's coming out what's called the NetV, N-E-T-V, and they've submitted it to the FCC. There's all kinds of interesting information here about the new Chumby, including a user's manual. So if you are a Chumby fan, this is the new Chumby is coming, and it's very small from a footprint size. A little bit on space news here. I got a glass of water in here. Where did I put it? Okay, NASA launched a Delta II Grail spacecraft, and they were able to get those spacecraft that were headed towards the moon. So they had a little bit of delay for some technical stuff, and but they were able to get the Twin Gravity Recovery and Interior Laboratory spacecraft basically on the way to the moon. So pretty cool stuff here, and we'll start seeing reports on that in a short order. Robert Scoble has a very interesting discussion about what he's entitling The Game of All Games, Content and Context, Why Mark Zuckerberg, Mark Benioff, and Larry Page Are Carving Up the Social World. And he goes into talking about why is Google calling itself an identity company now? And why is David Kilpatrick, one of the world's smartest journalists, telling the world on Forbes that a social revolution is coming to companies? And he talks a whole bunch about what he calls the game of games. And he gives a layout of what he's talking about here. This is a worthy listen, folks. It really is. And it really makes you think a little bit about what these companies know about us. So first, the things about us that they need to know. And he lists about 14 things. They need to know our health info. They need to know about our family, who we're related to. They need to know who our friends are, who we hang out with. Who would you call if you go to jail or need help to move? Your favorite brand and the most hated. They want to know if you play games, if it's Monopoly, Blackjack, World of Warcraft. They want to know your politics. They want to know your religion. They want to know what kind of music you're into. They want to know what kind of food you like. They want you to see how you answer questions on sites like Quora. Do you read books? Are they romance or are they tech books? They want to know where you live. They want to know your interests and hobbies. They want to know what kind of movies you go to. So this is information that these companies are trying to glean and learn about us, the identity company, Google. And I can almost guarantee that if Google is doing their homework right, they know almost all this information about you already. And he goes into a very interesting dialogue about this. And I think that we all should sit back and think just a little bit. And, you know, when things initially launch, things are pretty decentralized. Websites, content. You know, the web has been pretty much this whole, you know, there's thousands and thousands of sites. But what's happened is just like me spending a lot of time on Google+, spending a lot of time on Facebook, spending, just, you know, certain sites we're spending a lot of time at. We're not going out and finding new information and new sites and new content. We're all wrapped up into this big social media thing, and we're being sequestered into these little boxes. And then what the companies are doing and the sites that we are going to, they're starting to snap those up. Travel sites, restaurant review sites, all these types of sites are starting to grab up and consolidate. So they want you to go to a specific place for content, and they want to learn about you in the context of how you live so that they can better market to you. And because we're not going to all these variety of different sites, because you're not visiting a new site every evening, you're going to the same four or five, and I hope one of those is Geek News Central. Matter of fact, we know a lot of you are coming to Geek News Central on a daily basis because the traffic is really up. But I give you tech info. I don't want to know what kind of food you like. I don't care about your religion. I don't want to know your health info. I don't need to know who your family is because I know you're already part of the family here, family of listeners. And, you know, here I am, you know, I've talked about my CPAP machine, right? And my sleep apnea. And I was going to talk about this a little earlier in the show, but I thought I would save it to this segment. And so I've talked about my sleep apnea so that those of you that may have an issue will go and get help. I really was trying to determine the first week if I was really feeling better, if I wasn't as sleepy during the day. And what I have found, the more the time goes on, the more awake I am. Now, that's kind of a weird thing to say, but I'm going to be straight up. I've been running in a fog for a while, and a lot of it is because I didn't realize how sleep deprived I was, and it is making a big difference. And I'm actually doing a few things different now than I have before. You guys know I always used to brag about 4 and 5 hours sleep, that how I could go with 4 or 5 hours sleep. And probably I punished myself to the point of, you know, causing some of these issues that I'm having. You know, you know, it's just like you go out and party too much, you pay the penalty, right? So too many years of not sleeping enough. So now I am extending my sleeping hours a little bit and seeing how it's affecting me now that I'm on the CPAP. And what I'm finding is that my body naturally, without an alarm clock, is about a 6 hour ringer. If I sleep more than 6 hours, I just wake up and I'm kind of like, I need to get out of bed. But it's changed the way my health has been, and I'm feeling better. So here is the, you know, I'm talking about it on this show. And if someone like Google goes in and indexes my show, they're going to know that I have sleep apnea. They're going to know that I'm on a CPAP machine and I'm trying to lose weight. And as a matter of fact, they should be marketing to me heavily, like Weight Watchers or something like that. They're not, because I haven't talked about it on the blog, but I've talked to you guys. But as soon as I start doing that, then they're going to start gaining that information. Now, for those of you using Gmail, you know, Google says they're not looking inside that email, but what if they were? There would be nothing left that they would not need to know about. They would already know. So do you guys think? Are you guys conspiracy theorists like I am to a certain extent in saying that we are slowly, essentially giving up all our rights to privacy by basically doing what we do online and being logged into websites, and they're tracking our every move? Makes you think a little bit, doesn't it? Love to hear your feedback on this, geeknews@gmail.com. Wanted to spend a little bit of time on it, and then going back to just finally on my CPAP stuff. If you even think that you have sleep apnea, go see a doctor, please. Do it for me, and it'll change your life. All right, Samsung wants to own your first, second, and third screen. And, of course, Samsung Smart TV is a pretty cool little internet-connected device. We like it. And they've been helping app developers do some challenges and some contests and stuff. But the latest version of the free TV challenge is focused on app developers. Apps developed to bridge the divide between TV and mobile phones. tablets and PCs. So what they want to do is while you're watching your Samsung smart TV, they want you to have your Samsung device and be able to do something to interact. And I think this is pretty cool because Samsung's also realized that most of us now, when we're watching TV, have something else in our lap or in our hand that we're doing. And they want to get that connection in between there so that they capture a little bit more of your time. Well, there's all kinds of potential here for us to do a lot of cool stuff, even in the new media field. I've been talking to several people over the weekend and I've had these great conversations. There is going to be a time when you're going to be able, in the short term, and I would say very soon, to be able to watch this show on a device. And at the same time, when other people that are listening to the show on the same device are there, you're going to be able to chat about the show. And even if you're watching it delayed, if the audience is big enough and enough people are watching, you're going to have this interactive experience with your TVs. You know, that they're changing the way TVs are now, and a lot of people don't believe they're going to become more. A lot of people say TV's TV. But I'm going to tell you, for a lot of people that are probably 40 and under, maybe 35 and under, they want their TVs to do so much more. They're not satisfied with clicking the channels. And being that we've cut the cord here, we're seeing all kinds of potential by using apps and by using our different devices that we have. The Google TV, again, I'm convinced is going to be a game changer when they finally get their act together and roll out the new version. It's just going to change the way we sit around and watch television in the evenings. And time will tell, but Samsung understands this. I think they really do. I think they understand it as well as Google does, and maybe better than Apple TV or Apple does. You know, that's a big word there. But you know, Apple introduced AirPlay, right? And which enabled owners to stream content from their tablets to their big screens. But that's just a feature. That's not the interactive part we need. And leveraging these robust environments. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen with smart TVs. I really am, and how they move forward. Or a little more on the science front, changing gears here. The first view of the Robonaut eyes at the International Space Station. And I see this image, and it looks a little creepy. There's an article that was over on Gizmodo. And let me bring it up here on the page for you. But, you know, kind of a bluish tint. You can see all this stuff flying around. And I love here how there's a little dark humor. And because some people have been creeped out about this Robonaut. Because the Robonaut said, "Earth, you are looking good this morning." As it turns, okay, now this is, you know, this, and then, you know, that's what it said today. But 10 years from now, it says, "You are looking good this morning," as it turns an orbital antimatter cannon platform to face our planet. So, you know, just basically the robots are coming and people are a little weirded out. But anyway, we're a long ways from that. Not in our lifetime, I don't think, but pretty cool stuff. All right, another article over on Gizmodo. Now you can view full TBS and TNT series on the iPad for free. So NBC has released an iPad app, of course. So they've added TNT and TBS to it. So this is pretty cool. I don't know what kind of authorization stuff. We'll have to find out, because if they make you authorize that you're already a cable subscriber, that's going to kind of blow. But you're going to get some movies for TBS, and we're kind of excited here. I talked to my wife about it. And although TBS and TNT are not two channels we normally watch, even when we had regular cable TV, it is cool to get more options. I was going to talk about this on the last show, but maybe I did mention it. But you guys know about, have probably heard already about this this Nike Air Mag promotion that's going on, where they're selling the Michael J. Fox Back to the Future tennis shoes mock-ups on eBay. And right now they're going for about $6,100 a pair. But all the proceeds of this is going to the Michael J. Fox Foundation to help find a cure for Parkinson's disease. and they've been dropping a little bit, but they've got a limited number of these. I don't know how many total. They've got 150. Oh, the first 150 pairs have averaged $6,142 for a grand total raise of $921,000. They feel that near the end that they may get down around close to $1,000. I don't. You want to go buy a pair of tennis shoes you'll never wear for $1,000? I'm not that big a fan. Really not. So anyway, link will be up in the show notes on that. All right, now many of you play fantasy football. I know that my brother-in-law does. I know he's a fanatic at it. So if you're ready for some fantasy football, you, Yahoo, and Android are. A good write-up by Alan at Geek News Central talking about a fantasy football app. And so if you've got an Android device and you're using Yahoo as your fantasy football location, it's available via the Android market. It's called Yahoo Fantasy Football 11. And so good luck on that. If I did something like that, that would just like consume me. And be honest with you, I don't even know who is on football teams anymore. I hear, you know, people talking about certain players. And I'm kind of like, huh? I really am clueless. It's horrible. And not only do we have viruses to worry about on our Mac and PCs, now we've got viruses to worry about and malware that is making its way into mobile devices. And this is pretty scary stuff here. The rise of smartphones and tablet malware is the number of actual noted cases up 273% this year. So in 2010, there was reported 2,093,000 cases of malware infecting a phone. In just the first half of this year, they're already up at 1.245 million. And they're saying just because it's a phone doesn't make you invulnerable. So now we're probably all going to have to buy antivirus software for our phones. It's give me a break. It's, you know, not that I need another subscription to pay. I really don't. But kind of an eye-opener there from Andrew. Of course, one of our regular bloggers at Geek News Central. Hey, Intel is going to be revealing in January 2012 the Atom E6XX. This is a new mobile processor. And, of course, Atom processors are running in a lot of mobile devices already. But they don't want to be kept out of this game, so Intel is moving forward, and we'll introducing the E6XX series in January. Probably we'll get a lot of information on that at CES. The IBM Watson is set to tackle health insurance, and basically now IBM supercomputer is going to be used to help doctors make decisions on healthcare issues. Going to be managing healthcare databases, patient records, prescribing medicine. Kind of scary. A computer's going to be telling us what's wrong with us. Makes sense. Maybe do a better job than some doctors. And of course, if there's doctors listening to the show, I don't take it the wrong way, but I've had a few idiots in my day that I probably could have went online and Googled something and come up with a better diagnosis than they have been able to do. On the other hand, it's just been the opposite. I've had some great doctors as well. But it won't be too. Of course, everyone now Googles stuff before they go to the doctor. That's for sure. A big announcement by Ford in conjunction with Bug Labs, and of course we've covered Bug Labs heavily at CES in the past. Ford and Bug Labs have developed an open source R&D platform for socially network in car connectivity. This is geek heaven. This is going to be so cool. They're going to let people develop modules. And remember, the Bug Labs allows you to build on a common infrastructure, all kinds of cool stuff. And once you read this, you're going to be excited. The geeks out there are going to be really, really pleased with what's going to happen here, what they're going to do. But a quicker way to open source and developing stuff for our cars. Now, I'm a little bit concerned about a safety issue, you know, because of all the things that we do in our cars that we shouldn't do while we're driving. So I don't know how Ford's going to manage that. I really don't. So I'd be interested to talk to my Ford contacts to find out. Hey, the folks at Mercedes, it was accidentally leaked. The Mercedes-Benz F-125. It's a hydrogen car mock-up. No price on this, but they're going to show this off in Frankfurt, Germany, in an upcoming car show, I guess. And but they've got some cool pictures of it. It looks out of this world, and I'm sure it has an out of the world price. Now I'm going to show you something here that you're just, all the ladies are going to be like, what? And fellas too. This is over on Yanko Design, and this is a mock-up, but of a new Electrolux type of stove. We're going to have the computer on it and a place to put the pan and a conductive heating. Be able to take this with you for camping or whatever. It's very odd. It's a computer with a place to put a pan and cook stuff. Can you imagine cooking something? Oh, I should have showed you guys this. Cooking something greasy next to a screen. It doesn't make any sense to me. This thing's got a whopper of a battery in it too. There was a page that had a mock-up of this thing, but it just does not make any sense on why anyone would ever need this. But you can take your computer with you. You can have connectivity. You can have a camera, and you can cook on it. So I guess that's what the saying is, everything but the kitchen sink. Well, Electrolux wants to do that for you with a new portable countertop. A former RIAA lobbyist, now a judge, says that the lowest possible statutory damage for a single case of infringement is $3,430. Do you guys remember we talked about Judge Beryl Howell? Well, she's made a judgment on a person that is being sued by the company that was basically called Call of the Wild Movie, that trying to get him for infringement. So this individual is now going to have to pay $3,430 for his single movie file of infringement. We talked about this copyright troll Evan Stone before, and how the judge had basically told him to back off, and he had assigned EFF and Public Citizen as a defendant to some of the John Does. And this guy basically flipped off the judge and filed a bunch of subpoenas to get information, may have settled with some. The judge has come down with a sledgehammer and has basically sanctioned him for $10,000 for not following the court's rules. He's got to pay court costs. It's not pretty. This lawyer is in big trouble with this judge. But these guys think they can just continue to strong-arm people in a big way, and it's nice to see some judges standing up, even though we have one that's doing a ridiculous amount of damages for a single case of infringement. There's a good case study by TechDirt. I'm not going to go into this, but if you're an artist, music artist, you need to read this article. How much does a band make from various music platforms? It talks about the percentages and how much you make, or how much your record label makes every time your song is played. Imagine working on a research project and having some stuff you need printed at a print shop, and basically submit it to them, said, hey, you can't print this. This is a copyright infringement. And you go back to them, say, but the photograph that I'm asking you to print was produced in 630 AD. Apparently there's a lot of print shops now that are giving a lot of people a lot of trouble about printing stuff, especially if they feel that it's a copyright violation. So this guy had to go to multiple print shops before he found someone that would print a copy of his 630 AD image that he got from some other research sources. So just blows me away. It really does. People become total idiots here. Oh, those of you in the EU, the EU is extending music copyright for up to 70 years. So just so you know that sound recordings by the Beatles and Rolling Stones and other famous bands, it was due to expire in the next few years. If you live in the EU, those copyrights have been extended another 70 years, I'm sure, to the delight of the album holders or to the rights holders. There's a brief in the Atlantic notes of the U.S. Senate Energy Appropriations Bill has failed to supply funds to continue plutonium-238 production. Some of you go, well, that's great. Well, plutonium-238 is used in radioisotope generators. It's what powers many spacecraft, like the Cassini-Huygens that's out doing business now in Saturn. They say that the only other place for source of plutonium-238 is Russia. So at this point, the U.S. government is not funding continued production, so we may not have plutonium for additional spacecraft. Good article over on itworld.com. SoftBank founder backs Japan's shift to renewable energy. And there's a very interesting, his thoughts on how they can turn Japan around in the next 20 years and become basically go off the grid and use solar and water and a variety of other things to make up Japan's energy needs. If any country has the will to do it, Japan is the country that would do it. They do not like being beholden to anyone. And I think it will be interesting to see how they work on their renewable energy sources. Probably the coolest thing I found tonight was a new, well, it's something that's been available, but I didn't know about it. It's called Mouse Without Borders. So if you've got more than one Windows 7 machine sitting on your desktop, you can use this Mouse Without Borders application that is, it's free. It's about a 1 meg install. It will allow you to use to go across multiple screens running on different computers. You can drag a file from one machine to the next. You don't need a KVM. You can just use a single mouse. Doesn't say about keyboard. Oh, no. It says keyboard, video, and mouse to work with. Wait a minute. I think it's just mouse. I don't think you can use a keyboard across all these. We'll have to double check that. But I like this idea of being able to go across multiple machines with a single mouse. That would help clean my desktop up a little bit. There's a study out in the computer world saying that most will access internet via mobile devices by 2015. If that's the case, man, that's going to be a major shift and we're going to need a lot more bandwidth. A good article on if you're giving updating your Android phone and giving your phone to another person on how to wipe your device clean and how to restore from to factory defaults. I have that in the show notes for you. Also, they're expecting the iOS 5 Gold Masters are expected to pop next week with a potential release of iOS 5 around September 23rd. That's the rumored date. So we'll see what happens with this. Also, if you have an old Mac that is running on a PowerPC, Apple is canceling security updates for the PowerPC, so you are no longer going to get updates for those machines security-wise. So be aware of that. Get your final updates because no more security updates for the PowerPC Max, okay? There was a lady that sold a bunch of fake Cisco gear. She's went to jail, forfeited all her properties, and been revoked. They revoked her U.S. citizenship and will be deported after she spends her 60 months in jail. She essentially sold fake Cisco gear and it was basically gear imported from Japan. So, nice to see them catch someone like this that was definitely having a negative impact to a company's bottom line by selling forged stuff. There's also a new transatlantic telecom cable being laid under the Atlantic, and basically it's called Hibernia, H-I-B-E-R, Hibernia Atlantic. It says that if a trading company can save a millisecond on a trade, it could be worth as much as $100 million to them. Wow. So this new fiber is going to be put into service in 2013. If you are a ninjavideo.com fan, better get off the site. Department of Justice is about ready to take it down, and they've charged the site admins. Four people have been charged, and definitely going to turn into a case where people is going to get some jail time. And finally, this one was submitted via our Google Plus thread today. It's about Rainflow Fish. It's fiber in the home and how to run HDMI throughout your home. It just uses fiber optics. It's a pretty cool service where you can extend an HDMI signal up to 1,000 feet. And Rainflow Fish fiber optic HDMI will be launching soon. So this was shown at the at a show there in, I believe it was at Cydia. They're going to be at CES as well, so we'll definitely be checking them out at CES. All right, let me go ahead here real quick and get into the email comments. We got just a few, and then we're going to get everybody out of here on time tonight. Let's see. Let me go up to this date. No voicemails tonight. Okay, I got an email from Lawrence. He says, "Hey, Todd, I've been a long-time listener since the beginning. Bought your book on podcasting way back in the day. Was watching show number 702. Was wondering if you could send me an invite on Google. For when I hear the only way you can get a Google is now by invite. I've sent you one, so you should have one. Lawrence also sent one to Gary, who had requested one on the last show. Got an email here from Christian saying, Todd, he said, here's a link to a news story regarding why Stars might have left Netflix. And it basically links up to a potential Netflix competitor. So I'll have that link up in the show notes. I got a second email from Christian saying, Todd, just some feedback from episode 703. You asked if listeners still use Yahoo. At this time, I have a Yahoo ID, but the reason I have is because of Flickr. I started using Flickr before Yahoo acquired it from Ludicorp. Once Yahoo acquired it, it was a while, but they had you convert your login IDs to Yahoo ID. I know that I have one as well. I can't remember the last time I used my Yahoo ID anywhere else. The whole Yahoo debacle just shows how a company can lose sight of its direction because of the lack of direction the people leading have in trying to strengthen a strong product name. He says, hospital information on homework website. I agree with you on the lack of intelligence of some people with working at companies over the years. We've had employees that claim to have knowledge of Excel and or Excel. Once hired, they lack the knowledge. Their lack of knowledge is clearly shown. Even when you take the time to train them, they still don't retain the information. Hopefully, the hospital's first step was to track down and fire those involved. Of course, when you hear about a problem like this, it makes you wonder if some of the people who work for you have done something like this as well. As usual, thank you for the show. Great job, Christian. Thank you for that. And last email was another person sent me a link to the Saturn video. It says, truly jaw-dropping video. I'll have the link up in the show notes on it by the Saturn flyby. All right, that's it for tonight, folks. And I want to thank everyone for hanging out with me and being part of the family. Make sure you tell folks to go over to geeknewscentral.com, subscribe to the show, help promote it, and that helps out a great deal. And of course, we want you to send comments if you have on the show today to geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, the Twitter address is @geeknews. It's been my pleasure to bring the show to you as usual. We'll see you on Thursday, and hopefully I don't blow the intro like I did last time, but hey, you know, it is what it is, right? All righty, buddy. We'll see you next time. Take care and aloha.